Blog Talk Radio.
Jason Easley, and this week's topic is racism. I have to admit, the topic was inspired by Don Imus and the events of this past week that led him to be fired. In fact, I prepared a few little words as way of introduction for this week's program. I think Americans are lazy, not physically lazy necessarily, but intellectually lazy. The events that led to Imus' firing this week show that we like simple answers to complicated problems. In fact, the entire presidency of George W. Bush stands as evidence for this type of thinking. See, there's a game we play with racism in this country. Person A, usually someone famous or in the media or on the radio, says something offensive. If they're famous enough, they can blame it on booze, drugs, or a combination of both, go to rehab, come out a month later, apologize to all, and everything is forgiven. Now, if you're a clean and sober person like Imus, you don't have this option. So when you screw up, when you cross the racial line, the great American kabuki dance on the issue of racism begins. Now, to me, here's how it works. Somebody says something offensive and invariably gets called to the carpet by civil rights leaders like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. Sharpton, Jackson, and their ilk start calling for heads to roll. They keep the pressure up. The corporate dollars flee from whatever media venture or entertainment venture is backing the person that said the offensive remark. And the offender eventually gets fired. Everybody pats themselves on the back for getting rid of racism in America. The problem is this. At no time during the Don Imus fiasco did we have a serious discussion of race in this country. People assume that if a person makes an offensive remark, we punish the person, we eliminate racism. That isn't true. People like Sharpton and Jackson, who claim to be civil rights advocates and crusaders, have made themselves very rich by jumping on the bandwagon of every single little incident that occurs, and I'm not trivializing the Imus incident, but they jump on the bandwagon of incidents like this while ignoring things that are happening in the Gulf Coast, in New Orleans, real, real problems, just to keep themselves on TV. Sharpton and Jackson are part of the establishment. Their business is civil rights. So, of course, people like that don't necessarily want a serious discussion about civil rights. They want to be able to hold up a few, leave their mansions, come on in, hold up a few signs, get their mugs on TV, and still keep their talk shows and the money flowing in. I think Sharpton and Jackson are a disgrace to the legacy of Dr. King. I think their behavior is a disgrace to racial discussion in this country. But let me tell you, politicians are no different. Our political leaders are terrified to talk about race in this country. They're so afraid to talk about it, they pretend like the problem doesn't exist. They pretend like it's not there. They pretend like everything's okie-dokie and everybody gets along just fine. The problem is when something like this Imus incident happens, we see that there are still racial problems in this country. There are problems of perception of race in this country. And punishing one offender, then patting yourself on the back and thinking the problem is over is just delusional. So we take a lead from our political leaders, we the American people, and we assume that since they don't talk about it, the politicians, that racism doesn't exist. We think it's too dangerous to talk about race in this country. We're all afraid of saying something that's going to cross the line or be offensive, so we brush the subject under the rug and we don't talk about it at all. The blunt truth is there's still a racial problem in this country. There's a racial problem in every section of this country. There's a racial problem all over this country, but nobody talks about it. So the point of this program today, or at least the first half hour, is to have a discussion of the questions of racism in this country. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I have the answers. I don't. I can't solve a problem that's at least 300 years old. The best I can do is use this forum to hold a discussion and maybe make people think. That's all I'm trying to do today on this program. With that being said, let me bring in my very own special guest, the usual commentators, and nappy-headed hoes. I got to say it. I couldn't resist. George.
Hello.
And Will.
Hello, James.
Okay, guys, you both there?
We are here.
Okay, good. Now, see, I'm sorry for the long-winded introduction.
No problem.
I thought this topic deserved a little bit of setup before we dive in. Now, I sent both of you guys some questions earlier this week.
Yes.
We're going to stick to those basic questions, but we're also going to see where the discussion takes us.
Okay.
How are you both doing today?
Wonderful. Very well.
Very wet.
Yeah, you're in even worse shape than we are, George.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
we're getting rained on pretty severely, but you know, you guys are getting drenched up there.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to just jump right into this discussion and let's get this thing going?
Sure thing.
Sounds good.
Okay, Will.
Yes.
Are you there, Will?
I'm here.
Okay, you haven't said anything. I was wondering.
No.
Well, you're awake over
I've been,
there.
I've been staying.
I might have to walk over to your house. Will lives four blocks from me. I would have to literally see if the phone would travel that far and see if I have to pay attention.
Bang on the door and say, Will, where are you?
I'm asking you a question. put down the remote, turn off CSI Miami, and let's talk about this. Now, okay, my first question for both of you is, and you said you both have had days to prepare. I expect nothing better than stellar answers here. Do you think there's a racial problem in the United States?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
It's something that people are trying not to acknowledge, the fact that there is one. But the simple fact is that the more that I was just watching, like for instance, I was just watching earlier this morning, there was the McLaughlin Group on, and it was one of, I think, about five or six different shows this morning, just from this one period of time, from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. And every little discussion, you know, like George Stephanopoulos, McLaughlin Group, Meet the Press, everybody was talking about the same issue. And on the McLaughlin Group, when this started brewing, when they started talking about IMUS, you couldn't hear a cohesive thought amongst anybody on that panel. It brings out such an explosive behavior in all forms, in all races. And just the fact that it causes that much of an emotional stir in us, that alone should be enough to tell you that, yes, there is a racial problem in America.
Well,
I definitely have to agree that there is a racial problem in America, and it's something that needs to be dealt with. And it's something that, as you said in the beginning, we cannot just shove under the carpet because it just leads to bigger problems if we just hide behind the bush and pretend that there's nothing wrong. One of the interesting aspects, and you know, I don't want to bring in the Civil War into this.
Go ahead.
But I was watching Ken Burns' Civil War, and they had a historian on there, and the historian said, as long as we're dealing with race in America, we are still fighting the Civil War. So.
Yeah, I think the racial problem goes back further than the Civil War. The Civil War is just the physical manifestation of the conflict.
Right.
The problem actually goes back to when the first slaves arrived in Virginia, which I think is 1609. I'm not a historian, so that might be way off, but it's in that ballpark.
Yeah.
Now, see, the problem here, I think for both of you, is now, do you both watch South Park?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you know how every time they have the town get together to cause a stir, all they say is rabble, 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 rabble?
Yeah.
That's what happens with the discussion of race in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Don Imus said just a terribly stupid, stupid joke. I mean, she should have never, ever come out of his mouth.
Right.
It was idiotic. I mean, but instead of having a serious, constructive discussion, we sit around, and the morning talk shows are like this, too. I didn't watch them this morning, but we'll rely on George's word. Rabble, 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 rabble.
Oh yeah. As soon as you know, McLaughlin stated the question, Pat Buchanan opened his mouth about something, and then all of a sudden the other three panelists that were on there just lost it. And it became this really loud back and forth that I haven't really seen since the last episode of The Real World. And it's really...
That's a startling personal omission there, George, that you watch The Real World.
Well, I watch it for the articles.
Yeah. Now, but yeah, okay. Now, see, well, Will notices this too, like, all the time. I mean, in our part of the world, we live in a college town, and there is sort of a de facto segregation here between town and student, and also within the student population, white and black and brown and yellow, and you know what I mean? There's not a lot of integration. Everybody's in the same classroom, but everybody tends to clump together where they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's always been one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen in university life, is if you have 100 students in a room, invariably the African-American students are going to be drawn to one part of the room together. The Chinese students will sit in another part of the room together. The white students will sit together.
And that's not something that, you know, that's out of the ordinary. That's something that that things just, you know, like you said, you know, like people, you know, like of different races and everything tend to gradually, you know, revolve around, you know, like center on one.
They move to where they feel comfortable.
Specific area. It's very much like in the same sort of fashion of the filmings of both the original Planet of the Apes and Titanic. In both mm-hmm. cases, you had a whole bunch of extras as different classes. And in Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm. different race, different kinds of primates,
different
and
species.
Everybody during the behind the scenes, everybody just seemed to be in their own space. Like the first class people, they all stay together. The third class people, they all stay together. Over in Titanic, with the Planet of the Apes, you had the chimpanzees all together. You had the gorillas all together. You had the orangutans all together. So it's something that just naturally happens.
By the way, some of our listeners want to join into the conversation, they can dial in at 718-664-6734, or you can instant message us at CAPJ71. Sorry, just
Will
wanted to get that in.
Oh, no. Put it in all the time.
Please do.
I was just about to say, because I finally memorized the phone number. I'm so proud of myself. I know the phone number now, and you're just going to dance all over me every week. I'm never going to get to say it again. Okay, now, it's interesting, George, that you brought up films, because that leads into our third question, which I might skip ahead and do. But I do have to ask, what did each of you think of Will first this time? What did each of you think of Imus's remark? And did the punishment fit the crime?
Well,
you go first this time?
Well, I think, in a way, I think the punishment did fit the crime because it was a stupid remark. And according to the president of MSNBC, he said it wasn't about the advertising dollars because he didn't get the word about the fact that three advertisers had already pulled out until a day later. But he said he got a lot of complaints within the MSNBC family about the comments. And
yeah, I think that's
usually,
a valid point.
Usually companies have their own policies.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Usually companies have their own policies that if you make a, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a president or a manager or even the janitor, that if you make some sort of remark like that, you're fired. I mean, that's basically.
I personally have no issue with MSNBC dropping Imus. None at all. The problem I have is CBS. CBS sat back and waited and waited and waited and hoped this thing would die down.
Right.
And then when it didn't, they canned Imus. That's sort of my – if there's anyone to blame, CBS started to see major advertiser and sponsor defections. Then they canned them. MSNBC fired him right away, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some validity there. If you're going to hold a zero-tolerance policy, then you hold a zero-tolerance policy. Let's hop over to George. George, what did you think?
I thought that, yes, the punishment did fit the crime because, first of all, Imus has been in this business for so long and has been through so much crap that he really should have known better. The problem isn't the fact that he said it. The problem is the fact that he said it directly aimed at someone, mm-hmm. and that's the problem. That's the thing that makes him different than the reasons why, say, Howard Stern got fired from WNBC back in the 80s. He got fired because he was doing his dial-a-date, and he upped the ante, you can say. He raised the stakes so that it was bestiality dial-a-date. That's what wound up being the final straw for him, and that's what wound up getting him kicked off of WNBC. With Opie and Anthony, when they were doing Sex for Sam, they were reporting that there was a couple that was having sex in St. Patrick's Cathedral, and that wound up resulting in them getting suspended and then getting fired. The same sort of fashion that Imus did. But at the same time, both of them, both Howard Stern and Opie and Anthony and everything, they weren't attacking someone specifically. That was the main problem with Imus. He was going after somebody specifically. And that's the main problem that resulted in this right now.
I think the sad thing for Imus is the guy may be a jerk, but I don't think he's a racist.
He's not a racist. He's a bully. He is a bully.
He's
an arrogant, self-respective bully. And it really kind of irritated me. And a lot of times he's delusional as hell. I've heard him on the radio on WFAN, mentioning Howard and Robin and all the other losers out there. And it was just like, you're on like the number 27th rated show around here. What are you saying, Howard and Robin and all the other losers? And that was when Howard and Robin were still on.
Here's my follow-up question within the Imus set. This might have been asked on the morning talk shows, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Imus was black, would he have been fired?
That's a good question.
That is a good question, that's where the touchy subject happens, because now all of a sudden that puts us right at the same spot that all of the other people are saying right now, basically defending Imus,
mm-hmm.
saying, well, what about, all the different hip hop artists and everything, and that's where everything really tends to get sketchy.
Or I'll offer you another scenario. If Imus, like Howard Stern, would have had an African-American in his studio on his crew with him, does he get fired for making that remark to a member who's an African-American if that person on the air laughs at the remark and accepts it? You see, the problem is there were a bunch of middle-aged white guys sitting around talking about something they really know nothing about.
Oh, yeah, they even quoted the wrong Spike Lee movie.
George.
They're mentioning Jigaboos and Wannabes and saying, oh, that was from Do the Right Thing. No, it was from School Days. Do your research.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that's the big question here is, is there a double standard? Because to me, racism is racism. It doesn't matter what color the mouth it comes out of is, it's still racism.
And there are a lot of hypocrites. There's a lot of hypocrisy out there because a lot of the people who are preaching against racism are on one end of the, in one arena. On another arena, they're doing completely the opposite.
They're not being consistent with what their
beliefs are.
To me, if we're going to have an open and honest discussion about race in this country, we need to include everyone and all the behaviors. This isn't just a white-black thing. This can be a black-yellow thing, a brown-black thing. I mean, there's racism at all levels. And just because maybe two minorities say bad things about each other, that doesn't make it okay. It doesn't matter. What's wrong is wrong. And the basic principle of racism is wrong. It just doesn't matter what color you are. But, I seriously doubt I'm just aspired to be black. I seriously doubt this is a controversy at all, actually.
I mean, maybe he has to
apologize to the Rutgers basketball team.
Right. I wouldn't
for,
put that.
For making a disparaging remark about women, which everyone seems to have forgotten here.
Right. It wasn't enough that it was racism. It was racism, and it was a derogatory statement. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It was
a sexist remark towards women.
That's a double-edged sword right there. You're basically...
Yeah.
No matter what, you're
picking a fight with two groups of people.
You're a middle-aged white man making a joke about black women. You're not going to go very far without somebody saying, "Hey, what are you saying?"
Yeah. I think CBS though really did act shamefully here. That they either should have fired him right away, or I would have indefinitely suspended him and sent him to sensitivity training. You want to see the 67-year-old Don Imus in Sensitive Secrets.
Oh, God, that would be...
For comedic value alone.
Oh, man.
Ben Imus to Sensitive Secrets. But you know what I mean? I think that if you're going to hem and haw and drag your feet on firing him, then you better do some corrective steps in the meantime before you pull the trigger.
But at the same time, though, there was one thing that people aren't really taking into consideration. And this is I'm not excusing CBS for their behavior at all. You know, because I think that they definitely, you know, screwed themselves by acting the way they did, by just basically shuffling their feet about it. But at the same time, MSNBC's audience for Imus was about several hundred thousand, while CBS had about, you know, several million, had a few million going on. So that was it was so much more, so many more listeners,
yeah,
so many more advertisers and everything that they had to be take into consideration.
Too. Yeah, I mean,
now, personally,
I'm
glad that MSNBC, you know, like, took him off the air because I was tired of looking at him. You know, just
that
show. I like listening. So we don't look locally. We aren't able to locally get that show on the radio.
Right.
We have to basically pull it off MSNBC if we want to watch it in this part of the country.
Yeah, I really.
The problem is it just wasn't very visually arresting.
No,
especially an old guy in the cowboy hat, ramble on for 4 hours every morning.
Yeah,
well, you've got to go to sleep too.
He's got a face for radio, I'll tell you that much.
Well, so don't we all, though.
Oh.
Now, we have about 10 minutes before we got to hit the news, boys. By the way, our guest at 2:05 will be 401 Mania's own Sean Strzok. Hopefully he'll jump into this discussion with us, and we'll talk, and we'll, you know, laugh, we'll cry, we'll all heal. we're healing the nation together, boys. Think about that. We are uniting instead of dividing. Okay, I'll bring up this question. We'll probably just get into it, and then we'll have to go to the news. Why are movies and television so segregated? And why does this seem to be okay with everyone? Because if you notice on TV and in movies, we have white movies, black movies. We have on TV, we have white shows, black shows. In the movies, you rarely find a cast that is fully integrated, and most of the blockbusters are white. I mean, ghost white. George?
Go to the movie expert.
You got to start off with me now. No, he's the movie guy.
I hit Will first last time. We're taking turns here. So.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, well, you're the movie expert anyway, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's very much like in the same sort of fashion as what I was mentioning about before, about people basically choosing to segregate themselves. And, like, that's just basically the direction that they go in. And it's when there are times when they try to mix in the factors and everything, but then do a poor job executing it, then they'll just go ahead and say, oh, well, we tried to mix the races and it didn't work. Like, perfect example is The Honeymooners. The Honeymooners adaptation that they did with an all-black cast.
That was a black movie.
Which was
designed to be a black movie.
Right, but it was based on
a
1950s
show.
Television show with an all-white cast. And
that's not going to work.
Right, exactly. And because of that, you know, like, and everything, I give them credit for trying it.
Yeah.
Because I do think that was somewhat of a ballsy move on their part. So they put in some risk. They knew that they were going to be turning off their core audience that watched The Honeymooners. But at the same time, the core audience that watched The Honeymooners, they don't go to movies.
Yeah,
as much as they used to.
They're 70, 80, 90 years old.
Exactly.
Maybe in their 60s if they're lucky.
But if they did a good enough job to execute it, then who knows what could have happened? It could have become.
George, can you think of a blockbuster that was integrated and didn't just have a token black character or a token Hispanic character as a sidekick or a buddy? I can think of one.
And that was?
Rush Hour. Asian and African American leads.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a blockbuster. That's all I can think of. I'm serious. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just, it's marketing. It's because minorities have become used to going to white movies. If minorities in this country want to go to a blockbuster in the summer, the cast is probably going to be all white.
But at the same time, though, I mean, there's another element that also has to be taken into consideration with summer, especially summer blockbusters. summer blockbusters are designed to appeal to the masses, and the best way to do that is to have archetypical characters. That's why I said on 411 a while back when I was doing my Essentials column.
Self-promotion.
Exactly. And this is where I do the thumbs up and the cheesy smile. but at the same time, the best way to do that, this is what I mentioned in the Essentials, the ultimate example of using archetypical characters to appeal to everybody was Independence Day.
Yeah.
Because you have different races, you have different cultures and everything, and everybody
right.
is there to basically represent that particular race, that particular culture. So
it's been 10 years, really, probably since Independence Day, right, or more?
Yes.
Yeah.
We haven't seen another movie like that in a decade. now, Will, what do you think?
Maybe
you're segregated, or am I just crazy?
Well, I think that George took the words right out of my mouth.
I'm going to let you go first all the time from now on.
Me? I'm kidding.
No, but
I think that whatever appeals to the masses and in the marketing strategies of the films, and other than that, I must admit that I really don't know much about the subject.
A great tactic there. It is marketing strategy. Because every movie is carefully marketed to a certain demographic. The
mm-hmm.
slasher movies are marketed to the teen demographic.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the
weepy,
really
romantic, they're all marketed somewhere. I mean, except for the summer blockbusters, which are the most expensive films.
Yes.
So why is it that the most expensive films rarely feature minority characters and everyone goes, that's okay?
Because of previous successes. That's the main thing. You have previous successes. I mean, There is another franchise and everything that became a blockbuster success, even though the original was a minor success, and those Bad Boys.
Yeah.
Because that had like a cult audience and everything, because Michael Bay's career was going farther than anyone expected, then he was able to do Bad Boys 2, and the budget for that was just off the charts. But it became a hit. It became a big hit. While having like a story that, you can probably read on a cocktail napkin, but at the same time
I'm sorry.
You want to jump in there?
We just got an instant message.
Oh, from whom saying what?
J.B. Smith, 316.
Oh,
what about
Jared.
Jared, yeah. What about Shawshank Redemption? Long Kiss Goodnight.
There's
Independence
a
Day,
movie.
Moonlight,
also
and Valentino.
Not really a blockbuster.
And Nothing to Lose.
I wouldn't throw it in the blockbuster category, but definitely an integrated film.
Right.
Definitely an integrated
Good
film,
point.
But at the same time, the filmmakers or the producers and everything will look at Long Kiss Goodnight and say, oh, that didn't make money, because unfortunately it didn't. And it was a very good movie, and it was something that people don't really, kind of take into consideration because of the fact that it didn't make money. That's basically the way that it goes. They say that the people, are the ones that shape the marketplace. That's wrong. It's the marketplace that decides the marketplace.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look how the movie industry has perfected the art of promoting something often enough to guarantee a big first weekend box office.
And not only that, but promoting
the biggest piece of crap in the world.
All they're doing right now is catering to products that have a built-in audience, and that's the thing. That's the thing that they're doing. That's why
there are so many
sequels and everything.
Well, originality in film is found basically at the independent level, in all honesty.
Yes.
You have to go way down deep to find some originality.
Yes.
But we didn't get into TV shows yet, and that's where I think the real racism is. The real segregation is in television. I thought and thought and thought, and I pretty much came up with about three shows that feature some form of realistic integration within their concept. I'll give them to you real fast, because we have 1 minute, and then you can comment really quickly if you want. King of Queens, Scrubs, and The Unit is probably the only mixed show that has an African-American lead. I've scanned my brain for 4 days. I might be missing something, but all the other shows fall in the category of white or black. Anybody want to add anything? We got only about 45 seconds here. Any final comments before we throw to the news?
Well.
so nobody's really going to agree with me here?
We're both sitting there trying to rack our brains and everything, just like I know there's another one, but I'm getting put on the spot here.
What about Lost?
Well, what's that?
What about Lost? Or is that just...
Yeah, I kind of take the dramedies, that's a drama, in
okay.
a different sort of category. But it works, though. I mean, that's an integrated show, but it's done more for a mass appeal. Law and Order is an integrated show. ER. And then the list sort of runs thin. When you think about all the shows that are put on network television every year, we can come up with maybe 7. Think about that.
Wow.
But it is 2 o'clock. It's time for the news. Hopefully at 2:05, our guest Sean Strzok will be with us. Will, you want your music?
Yes. Play it.
I figured you would. Well, you're going to get the short shot this time.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be ready.
Go.
The Political Universe time is 2 p.m. Here is the news. On Saturday, the White House announced that it will cooperate with a request made by the Senate Judiciary Committee to take on an outside expert to recover the lost emails that are in question as part of the investigation that deal with the firings of 8 U.S. attorneys. This comes after the White House admitted that it cannot locate emails that were from Chief Political Strategist Karl Rove that cover a time span of 4 years. According to White House Press Secretary Dana Perino, that there might be a possibility that up to 5 million emails are missing. A German military training video has the Bronx in New York City up in arms. The video, which has a German military instructor telling their recruits that, quote, "Now you're in the Bronx. A black truck stops in front of you. 3 African Americans get out and insult your mother grossly. Every time before you pull the trigger, I want to hear you shout, 'Mother effer,' very loudly," end quote. Bronx Borough President Alfonso Carrion Jr. was disappointed by the video and commented that, quote, "Clearly these people don't know anything about African Americans or the Bronx," end quote. A spokesperson for Germany's Federal Defense Force says that an internal inquiry has been started that may lead to disciplinary actions. The Reverend Al Sharpton has called on President Bush to condemn the video. According to a press release by the World Trade Organization, the United States recorded its highest annual export growth in a decade, even though when attributed to price changes, its merchandise exports expanded faster than U.S. imports. This comes as China's trade growth continued to outstrip other major competitors. China's export of merchandise goods grew by 27%, and in the second half of 2006, for the first time, the country's exports started to exceed those of the United States, even though U.S. exports overall were higher in 2006. This could be attributed to factors such as a slowing in the U.S. domestic demand, which is expected to decline further in the first half of 2007. In 2006, China still remained the third largest importer and exporter of trade goods. According to the WTO, China has enhanced its role as the leading supplier. Overall, 2006 witnessed a growth in the world economy and dynamic trade growth. Global gross domestic production increased by 3.7%, the second best performance since the year 2000. On Wednesday, Defense Secretary Robert Gates announced that active Army units in Iraq and Afghanistan will serve for at least a 15-month tour of duty, which was previously a 12-month term. Secretary Gates described the policy as, quote, "a difficult but necessary interim step that will be kept in place and only until we can shift with confidence to the 12-month deployments in 12 months at home and ultimately to the rotation goal for Army active duty forces of 12 months deployed and 24 months at home," end quote. He went on to say that, quote, "this policy will cover 2 other goals. First, it represents a fair, predictable, and sustainable commitment to our troops that they can use in confidence to understand what the country is asking of them as they deploy. Second, this policy is a matter of prudent management, will provide us with the capacity to sustain the deployed force. This approach also upholds our commitment to decide when to begin any drawdown of U.S. forces in Iraq solely based on conditions on the ground." You are listening to The Political Universe here on Blog Talk Radio. Now back to Jason Easley.
Well, thank you, Will. I didn't realize the news was only going to be 3 minutes long.
Sorry.
I know now. I heard it when I came in and had to take myself off mute. Now, gentlemen, we have a caller on the line. I believe this is our 2 o'clock guest. Let me check and see. Hello, caller.
Howdy.
Is this Sean?
Yes, this is.
Hi, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Hey.
George, Will, say hi to Sean.
Hello, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Sean. Okay, Sean, you are a fellow 411 Mania colleague, which makes Will the only oddball of the bunch. We're all in the same fraternity, necessarily. The hazing is a real hassle. So what exactly do you do at Portland Womania?
Well, I do a few things, mostly on the 411 Mania Games section. I have a weekly news report called The Code News Report. I also do reviews for the video game section, the odd previews. I've done a couple interviews with some movers and shakers in the game industry, and I've also contributed two interviews to the politics section as well.
Yes, which is wonderful, and we love you for it. So, let me ask you, do you want to join our discussion here about racism? Because I have a specific question for you.
Okay, well, I suppose I could join
the discussion. Could I drag you into the discussion? I mean, the other two gentlemen are, I've had to kind of drag answers out of them, as you could tell today. they haven't been very opinionated at all. So my specific question for you would be, in games, now, is there a more how are games marketed and targeted? Is there sort of a racial element to game marketing or game promotion?
Not that I've really seen. It seems more to be the marketing demographic most game makers seem to care about is the 18 to 24, maybe 18 to early 30s male. So there's I haven't really seen a whole lot of a whole lot of race-specific marketing, like, okay, we're going to have a that doesn't mean that there aren't successful franchises. Like, take the Def Jam wrestling-slash-fighting
franchise.
Exactly
what I was thinking of, yeah.
But even there, you just see that. You see that in all sorts of game magazines, mainstream and mainstream and otherwise. And yet, you flip through, say, the pages of Jet or Ebony or whatnot, and that's you don't really see advertisements for stuff like that, but that's not really because, we're not trying to target a black audience or take, black culture and just sell it to mainstream America. It's more like that's just not where their target demographic is really reading.
Is it because games, unlike films or talk radio or politics or anything else in our society, games are basically escapist entertainment fare? There's an element of imagination and fantasy there.
I'd say that's probably a fair assessment to make. Be that as it may, though, I have noticed, several times that there really isn't. It's changing little by little, but there really haven't been a lot of notable main characters in the game that happen to be black.
And I think that's more. I think that isn't so much. That might be a reflection of the people making the games.
Right.
More so than an actual cultural statement.
Yes, especially when you consider that, especially when you consider, too, that a lot of games, specifically consoles, since that's my area of expertise, I'm not much of a PC gamer guy, a lot of console games are developed or designed or whatnot overseas in Japan first.
Yeah. And Japan is pretty much a closed cultural society or a closed ethnic society. There is a great deal of racism actually in Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
I know that just from necessarily people I know experiences. It's a different culture. It's a culture where almost everyone is Asian. There's not much of a melting pot in Japan.
Not really.
You're probably going to get that sort of reflection. This is what we do, and this is a reflection of who we are, instead of an overt statement of exclusion.
Exactly.
It's a different ballgame. Okay, Sean, let me try to bring you back into everybody else here. What do you think about racism? I'll give you an easy one. Sean, fix the racial problem in America in 5 minutes or less.
Oh, wow. Yeah, thanks for throwing the softball one there.
I'm just kidding. Well, what's your opinion? I don't know if you've been listening in so far, but what's your opinion on the whole IMA situation, have an opinion?
That's the funny thing. Imus is a special case because he's a special guy. If Mr., Joe Schmuck with the get up in the morning, crazy, wacky, fun time zoo crew pulled this sort of crap that he did, his ass would have been canned so fast he wouldn't know whether the pink slip was a wave or a particle. In fact, there was a local DJ that, I guess in a show of solidarity for Imus or whatever, made their, you know how they have radio contests where you can call in and be like the ninth caller and say like a phrase that pays or whatever? Yeah, he made the phrase that pays, you know, I'm a nappy-headed hoe. And within the day, he was canned. Now, yeah. Imus didn't get canned because he, as much as he tried to, oh, I'm just a shock jock, I'm just an entertainer, I'm just a big old, you know, wrinkly guy in a cowboy hat having a good old time, he's not a shock jock. He's been a political pundit. He's had Beltway, you know, an insider connection in Washington for, like, you know, going back at least two decades. So,
yeah. You're saying Imus is held to a different standard than your typical shock jock?
Pretty much.
I think that's a definitely fair assessment. Like I said, my whole problem is with the way it was handled, more so what Imus said. I mean, if you want to can Imus for that, I think there's more than enough justification. But if you better do it quickly. You better pull the trigger right away. If you're like, if you're MSNBC, you pull the trigger. If you're CBS, you don't wait around to see what the advertisers are going to do.
Oh, well, that's the funny thing, too. I found it was really, really funny how you know, CBS had had to take a week to think of the impact upon the children that yanking might have had, and you know they're thinking that they were actually, you know, we're mentioning the children, and you know everyone thinks, so hey, you know, he means the charity ranch he does, and no, yeah. By the children they meant, you know, advertisers and dollars.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what that gentleman. The other two members of our panel, would you like to weigh in at all?
I definitely have to say that I would definitely say that yes, you know, like Imus is held to a different standard, and I mean, because of the amount of history that he's built up as a force on the radio. You know, the guy has been, you know, like during the early 80s and everything, he was ruling New York radio, you know, like around here, and that's one of the top markets in the world right there. But at the same time, he's also somebody who has had a history of making comments like this, and this just seems to be, you know, like the straw that, you know, that broke Campbell's back, whatever. But
this
at the
is
same
the nappy-headed
like,
hoe that ruined a career.
basically, and the thing is that all I've been hearing is people saying how Imus is going to be okay. You know, like after a while he'll probably just go to satellite. I don't see that happening. And the main reason why is because this is another example of his past kind of coming back to bite him, because he was a complete and total, you know, ass to the one guy who's the top dog in satellite radio right now, which is Stern. And Stern has had a history of destroying other people's ratings and everything and driving them off the radio. I know he did that with John DiBella in Philadelphia. But at the same time, he always kept it on a business level. He never really took it personally. Imus, he takes it personally, because
I'll tell
Imus
you right now. I'll tell you right now. If satellite radio has a chance to take Imus, they gobble him up in a second. Satellite radio is probably going to merge. You're going to see XM and Sirius merge into one company,
right?
And they need all the star power they can get, and they're going to gobble up. The satellite radio is huge. They can put Imus and Stern far away from each other. They never have to get near each other. This isn't like commercial radio. They'll gobble them up in a second, just for the revenue he brings in. CBS was making $20 million a year of profit off Imus' show.
Oh, that is true.
They'll bring him in. Yeah.
In a minute. Now let's get back to our roundtable questions, because I wanted to kind of give Sean a few softballs to get him loosened up. the next question I had for you guys, because since you guys don't want to play along with me on the TV question, and I kind of caught you off guard. the next question, Will, are you awake?
Yeah, I'm here.
he did the news, and I thought he nodded off.
I'm awake after last night, so.
Well, and Jason, I actually did have one little quick thing to interject when regarding the television question. The main thing another thing to keep in mind is the fact that the creators of these shows are white men.
Yeah.
So that's another something. As you were mentioning before, you and Sean were mentioning before on the about the
game creators.
And how the creators of the games are of a certain race. That's basically the same sort of setup as television.
So do you think to integrate the television show that the creators have to be integrated themselves?
Well, I can think of one show off the top of my head, and that's Everybody Hates Chris. Everybody Hates Chris.
Yeah.
It was created by Chris Rock, Wiggles' mm-hmm. partner. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, I don't know the races, let's say, of a lot of other people that create these shows, but the whole Bruckheimer franchise is Lily White.
Yes.
I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, there are basically just now a handful of places that have deals with networks that are turning out these TV shows. But here's the fourth question. We have 15 minutes left in the program. I want Sean to get a chance to express his views because YouTube blowhards have been at it all day. is it possible for our politicians in America today to lead an honest discussion about race? Sean gets to go first.
To be honest, if... I'm really not sure that it might be possible. Not just because it's an emotionally charged issue, but to be honest, I think actually how the whole IMA situation was handled is a perfect example. Oliphant, for example, went on his show pretty much within the next few days after the whole controversy, and slipping into solidarity forever, and there are so many people, enabling this kind of behavior, which is sort of sad. I don't know if I really don't know if enough people are ready to take a good, long, honest look at themselves and the issue and see where they stand. It's really funny too, because Chris Rock, he has this one part of his routine about where he starts going, man, white man thinks he's losing this country. You watch the news and we're losing everything, and he's like, white people aren't losing shit. If you're losing, who's winning? It's not us. Then he goes on and says, there's not a single white man in this room that would change places with me. None of you would change places with me. And I'm rich. That's how good it is to be you guys. And what's sort of sad is a lot of people, they'll laugh or chuckle uncomfortably or whatever, but a lot of people don't seem to be willing to kind of acknowledge that kind of reality.
At that point. This brings up an interesting comment. Most of the brilliant social commentary now in this country, you'll find either in comedy or animation.
Well, yeah, it's safer to couch criticisms and stuff in humor or cartoons. I'm not sure if how familiar you guys are with. Musicals and Broadway shows and stuff, but there's one that came out a few years ago called Avenue Q. It's kind of like Sesame Street mixed with South Park. it's a very adult take on contemporary life and stuff like that. And the creator who wrote the songbook and everything was all like, we say some pretty offensive things, and we say some pretty out there stuff, and we can get away with it because it's puppets on stage.
That's it.
I think it's just that same principle.
I watch the Boondocks. Watch the Boondocks on Adult Swim. Watch South Park. Watch even Family Guy. The Simpsons has pretty much watered itself down, but The Simpsons at one point in time, all the really sharp social commentary is now hidden in something.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is so afraid of offending someone that they don't want to talk about it. And I think the politicians are so afraid of losing votes in this country, they just won't bring it up. Will, you go second, because you'll disagree with George if I let you go third.
Okay. my answer to that question is...
The politician.
I don't think that there can be an honest discussion about it, or at least if there is one, it's going to be very filtered, because one thing most politicians are being good at is being politically correct. And no one wants to come out of a meeting and express their honest, really honest, true feelings, and then leaving the meeting and saying, well, and have everyone point fingers at them and saying, well, he's a racist. And so nobody wants to be labeled that way or say something that may be interpreted, the wrong way. So I really don't think that there can be an honest discussion.
I swear to God, George, if you just agree with Will.
Well, I'm not going to say that, you know, like Will took the words right out of my mouth, but I will say that I do have to agree with both of these guys and say that, you know, like that is, it will be very difficult at the least to have a real intelligent conversation, because a major element that needs to be taken into consideration is the venue in which it's going to be shown. Because if you have you know, like just, you know, like a batch of political pundits and everything on one of these, you know, like many talk shows that were on this morning, all it's going to do is dissolve into, as in South Park, rabble, rabble, rabble. And that's what, you know, like basically what we're going to see. What I would personally like to see is people like, you know, is this sort of discussion taking place on, say, MTV? Because MTV would be not only like a venue where the future generation will be able to speak, be heard, you know, like be able to listen to what's going on and everything, but at the same time, you know, that will give, you know, like that way MTV will basically kind of have to explain themselves for airing the very sort of content that they, you know, like claim to be against.
Oh, MTV is one of the worst offenders.
Yes. That's why I'm saying that it's going to be very, very difficult for that to happen, because
I just don't want MTV to have this discussion in the context of next week on a very special episode of Laguna Beach.
Oh no, no, that's that's the case. It's like all
you know.
Then all it winds up being is just reduced to another slogan. You know, like people are saying how, you know, like and that's something that people that, you know, like that people in the entertainment industry like to think makes them relevant, but winds up working against them, like the whole vote or die campaign that P. Diddy did. That must have turned off like so many people, because the majority of the demographic that they were trying to reach didn't go out to vote.
Little did we know that he was right when it came to Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, who knew?
You know what I mean? Like, it vote or die literally became the case.
Right. There is one more point.
A lot of people who revoted that administration.
It was a
silly campaign, and it just came off as silly.
Yes.
Not vote and be heard, but vote or die.
Right.
Like, South Park parodied it, and that's still one of my favorite movie moments in South
Park.
Oh,
that was a terrific episode. The Duke of the Sir Sandwich one?
Yeah, that's just you can just cut out the rest of the episode and just do the whole part where Puffy's chasing Stan around to the vote or die song.
Yep.
That's pretty much it. I mean, okay, let's go back to Sean really quick here. Sean, everybody here talks about who they like in 2008. What do you think about the candidates in 2008?
It's really weird. It's really weird when you look on so far who are the front runners on both sides of the aisle right now. Like the big on the one side you have McCain, the pretend maverick, who, you know, is the pretend centrist and really has fallen in line with a lot of very odious policies. And then you have King Rudy I Giuliani, who is, you know, doesn't fit into the RNC mold at all. You know, he's pro-gun control, pro-abortion, and, you know, married his cousin and has no foreign policy experience.
That was a little harsh.
I'm from Jersey originally, and just with all the trips back and forth to the city and whatnot, people have this whole image of, you know, oh, well, hey, Rudy gave some stirring speeches after 9/11 and helped calm a nation and everything, and totally forget that 3 months later he was all like, well, you know, just in the interest of helping people in this difficult time, I think maybe we shouldn't have, you know, we shouldn't have any elections for a little while. Let me be mayor a little while longer.
Yeah, he basically tried to take power.
Yeah, pretty much. And then on the Democratic side, you have Hillary Clinton, who does have a long and established track record as a senator, but again, no real foreign policy experience. And then you have Barack Obama, who has he has that charisma, he has that idealism, but again, is you know, a little untested when it comes to again to matters of foreign policy, or say doesn't have the length of time in government that Clinton does. To me, really, I'm leaning more towards Edwards, but again, he has the whole, you know, lack of, or maybe not lack of experience, just the whole, I guess, dearth of experience.
There's a criticism on Edwards that he doesn't seem very substantial.
Yes, at least not right now.
I think that's what you're looking for, right?
Right, and that's a thing, though, too, and part of that is because, you know, a lot of these candidacies are just starting to ramp up right now, so it's a bit too early to tell.
We talked about this in one of our first days. It is so early for this, and I am a hardcore. I am politically trained. I am a hardcore political person, and I even think it's early. They say people are paying attention. I think people are paying more attention because they're so disenchanted with the Bush administration.
Pretty much.
They're just looking for when things are going to get better. And I'm personally of the opinion that I've had enough of Bush's and Clinton's.
Mm-hmm.
I think two decades of two family rule is enough. And we need to get some fresh blood in there.
Mm-hmm.
I just am tired of looking at a Clinton or a Bush.
It's kind of funny.
When I sit down to do the voluminous columns that I do every week, I intentionally avoid talking about certain people and certain things because I'm just tired of it. And I think that's the way a lot of people feel.
It's kind of funny.
It's fatigue. Okay, now, you're leaning towards Edward Shawn, which puts you in the same camp as myself and Will. George, who do you like in the election?
You already know this answer.
Just in case we have maybe a few new listeners who don't know, it's your chance to become Joe Biden's campaign manager. So come on.
I am personally going with Joe Biden. The man's got the experience in Washington. He's got a good semblance of a foreign policy. He has a plan on how to fix the mess in Iraq. The man is charismatic. He's very upfront. He knows what subjects to fight for and which subjects not to fight for, and he's just a very brilliant, you know, like intelligent man that really can do something. And I really say I'm definitely still holding out hope, considering the fact that he is kind of fading into the background, considering that you have the trifecta of Clinton, Obama, and Edwards. But at the same time,
George,
I'm really...
Let me run something by...
Oh, wait, Joe Biden?
Yes.
I don't know.
Here we go.
You know, he seems like a nice guy and all, but I think he's probably going to have the shortest presidential campaign, like, ever.
But at the same time, though, I'm hoping that...
Let me run something by you guys.
I'm still holding out hope for him, and I'm also saying that... And another major thing that I'm really hoping for is that if his campaign does not go very well, then at least he winds up being considered as a vice presidential candidate.
Let me run something by all you guys real quick. Joe Biden, Secretary of State.
Yeah, I could go for that. Yeah.
I think that's reasonable. I think that's actually fairly possible.
Yes.
You could see Bill Edwards vying for this, or Bill Richardson. Now I'm getting my Democrats confused. That just looks bad. They're going to take away my party card. Bill Richardson being Secretary of State. I mean, or Secretary, you know, there's so many qualified Democrats and I'm almost of the opinion that the Democrats are going to win this next election, unless Hillary Clinton is a nominee.
Do you think Wesley Clark will be Secretary of Defense?
Yeah, that's always been what we talked about, Will, and I think I still believe that. Wesley Clark will be the Secretary of Defense. Oh, they changed the Blog Talk Radio settings. I now have a big clock in front of me. We have a minute and a half left. It is time for pimps, boys. Sean Strzok, tell us where we can read you.
Okay, well, you can read me at www.411mania.com/games. You can see my column, The Code, every Friday morning. You can also see the reviews, news, and previews there, too, as well.
Sean does some great work for us in the politics zone, sort of as a freelancer. He's always welcome to come on by. George, where can we read your column?
You can also read me at 411mania.com. I am the writer of Scene Anatomy 101. You can see that every Wednesday. I'm also the writer of the UBS Evening Movie News. You can see that every Thursday. And right now you can take a look at the Movie Zone right now to see my review for Aqua Teen Hunger Force: Movie Film for Theaters.
Okay. Will, you have nothing to promote.
That's right.
Ha ha ha!
Jason, okay.
With the last 30 seconds of the show, I'll run down the list of everywhere you can find me. You can find me daily on the Blogger News Network. I'm the editor of 411 Media Politics. You can find me there Tuesday and Friday with the Political Universe News Report. I do the monthly roundtables. I mop. I do the windows. I vacuum. You can visit the radio show MySpace page, www.myspace.com/thepoliticaluniverse. And I think that's all. And our Blog Talk Radio homepage. So, for our guest Sean, for George, for Will, I'm Jason Easley telling you to come on back next week and bye-bye.